The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So much to talk about from the United States with Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated US columnist, and Marion McKeown, US correspondent of the Business Post. So Marion, what's been happening in court today with Donald Trump?
Well, it's been a busy day in court, even though it's a short day because of Passover and there's no court tomorrow. So basically, very briefly, there was an initial to and fro between Todd Blanche, Trump's lawyer, and the judge, Judge Juan Marchand, about these violations of the gag orders. The prosecutors were saying there were 10 violations. There hasn't been a ruling on that yet, but it got a bit testy between, as I say, Trump's lawyer and the judge, who the judge told him he was losing credibility. He was being really nitpicky. And again, you have to ask, this is a very reputable lawyer who worked for a very, very big firm. He left the firm to take up the case for Trump. And you kind of have to wonder what's in it, because none of them seem to come out with their reputations intact. The Trump sort of stuff seems to rub off a bit, but they left it there anyway and got on to David Pecker. Now, I think that David Pecker, who hasn't gotten as much attention as Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels as witness, for my money, he's arguably a more important and stronger witness because he doesn't have Cohen's credibility issues and he doesn't have the sort of the tabloid distraction that is around Stormy Daniels. So he was basically talking about how he worked as Trump's eyes and ears for the 2016 campaign. They met in 2015. He had a meeting with Trump and Cohen, and basically he agreed that he would, you know, publish flattering stories about Donald Trump and negative stories about his opponent. And he says that also Steve Bannon at some point was told to work with him in October 2016. This was after, of course, the Access Hollywood tape came out, which was also read in the court today. And, you know, this is all, I'm sure, the last thing Donald Trump wants. It's so tawdry. It's so sleazy. You know, the court sketches, apparently he's looking cross. He's slumped. He was closing his eyes.
Is that when he's awake?
Clearly, well, apparently, I suspect he is awake. He was also tweeting on Truth Social during the court break that the judge should recuse himself, which just seems phenomenally stupid at this stage. But, you know, all of this is great stuff. It's fun for observers to write about. But for me, you have here, you know, the case is about, it's 34 felony charges. Basically, the grounding charge is the falsification of business records in furtherance of a crime. And the crime they're trying to show was the defrauding of the 2016 election, this conspiracy between Trump, Cohen, Bannon, etc., Pecker. And I'm still not seeing, and it is early days, exactly where the crime is, because, you know, you can argue, and Trump's lawyers will certainly argue and have argued already, as has Trump, that basically hiding nasty stuff about yourself is what all politicians do who want to get elected, and that, you know, where is the crime in paying the falsification of the records of the money he paid to Michael Cohen? Yes, absolutely, that there were 34 misdemeanors there straight up, but where does it become this felony? Where is the fraud? Can they prove that Trump conspired to defraud the voters in 2016, and I think it's quite a leap, you know, and it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Okay, Cal,
the next several weeks.
Cal, Marion there just said that their man Pecker doesn't actually have a credibility problem, but surely being the owner and publisher of the National Enquirer is in itself a credibility issue.
Well, Marion is right when she says this sort of thing goes on all the time. People paying off other people to remain quiet, not to publish certain things. One thinks of Bill Clinton and Paula Jones, many others. Hillary Clinton, of course, was an election denier. There were people in the 2020 election between Bush and Al Gore who denied the outcome of that, said it was rigged, it was unfair. But I want to go back just for a second to the gag order, which Marion was talking about earlier. I think Trump lawyers have a good case on this, because Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen have been all over MSNBC and other media saying whatever they want to say. Michael Cohen, of course, is a convicted perjurer, served time in prison for lying under oath. Another judge had called him a serial liar. And so I think that a lot of people are going to look at this as a double standard. Cohen and Stormy Daniels are allowed to say whatever they want, and Donald Trump is supposed to be restricted in what he is able to say. Plus, he's caught in a courtroom for probably 6 weeks, and here's Joe Biden, the president, out campaigning, which I think makes a lot of Democrats happy.
Okay, and then what about what's going to happen in the Supreme Court this week, Cal, where it's been asked to decide if Trump is immune from federal prosecution?
Well, once again, Trump's lawyers say former presidents are entitled to absolute immunity. I don't know if that is necessarily going to ring true with the court. We'll have to see. But they, the lawyers, warn of a potential floodgate of prosecutions against former presidents if they're not entitled to immunity, and say the office cannot function if the commander-in-chief has to be worried about criminal charges. Now, I think that is a valid point. I think, you know, we've got this idea of tit for tat or payback. And if a Republican president is brought up on charges, then what's to keep Republicans for a future Democrat president bringing them up on charges? The poisoning of American politics just get worse and worse. You may recall Gerald Ford's pardoning of Richard Nixon because he wanted to see the nation healed. It cost him the next election, but I think it was the right thing to do. There's no way, of course, that Joe Biden is going to pardon Donald Trump or anything. But
sorry, Cal, is there not a big problem here that what you're essentially advocating is immunity from criminal acts? That you're giving carte blanche to any president to do something that is illegal and saying you can't be prosecuted afterwards?
Well, it depends on your definition, to paraphrase Bill Clinton. It depends on your definition of criminal acts. One person's criminal act may not be another person's criminal act.
Sorry, I think the laws are pretty clear on what criminal acts are.
Well, no, look, Matt, you've got Michael Cohen saying just today no one is above the law. Well, anybody who believes that is just a fool. There are plenty of people who are above the law. You think of now the late O.J. Simpson. You think of other people who have committed crimes but hired fancy lawyers at great expense and managed to escape judgments that would have put anybody else in jail. So that's just not a fact. There are a lot of people who are above the law, and laws have interpretations to them.
Marion, what do you make of that? That there are people who are above the law, even in the United States?
Absolutely not, Cal, because the huge difference here is they were not above the law. They were prosecuted. They went to trial, as did O.J. Simpson. Now, you might disagree with the jury's verdict. I certainly do. In his initial case for the murder of his ex-wife and her partner, but he was not above the law. We saw him being chased by the police. We saw him being arrested. We saw him being arraigned. And we saw his trial play out, the whole thing, over about an 11-month period. So, yes, he was acquitted, but he did face trial. Now, Donald Trump, if he is acquitted eventually, well, that's fine. But there's a big difference between being found not guilty and being considering that you are above even being tried at all. And I totally disagree with that. And also this thing that other presidents will be gone after now that you've opened some kind of a floodgate. It's nonsense. No other president has ever even been accused of committing a crime. No other president has tried to overthrow an election. No other president has tried to send up false electors. No other president has ordered the intimidation of election workers. No other president, and I can go on here, sicked a mob on
Capitol
on January 6th to stop the new president from being constitutionally sworn in. The president is supposed to uphold the Constitution and protect it. Donald Trump just trampled his way over it. So he absolutely should not be above the law. Now, there is a case for where if a president, for example, and people use this, like George Bush, did he legally declare war in Iraq? No, in my view, no, he didn't. He violated the UN resolutions, etc. Could he go to prison? That's a totally different situation because that was an official act. What Donald Trump did after every act he committed, basically after the November election, in his attempts to stay in power, none of those were official acts and none of them are defensible. And he deserves immunity for none of them.
Well, that's not what the trial in New York is about. That's not what the trial in New York is about.
Yes, I agree
Even Attorney General Bill Barr, who has been highly critical of Trump's behavior, as have I, has said this New York case should never have been brought. It was rejected by the Justice Department, by former New York DA Cyrus Vance, and even by Alvin Bragg, the current prosecutor, until now. And it was Bragg who elevated a misdemeanor to a felony after a statute of limitations expired. So this reeks of politics with Trump tied up in court for as many as 6 weeks. But all these things you're talking about, Marianne, are about future cases where you've got the Mar-a-Lago documents, where you've got the alleged attempt to overturn the election and false electors and all of that. That hasn't been judged yet. We're sticking with, right now, the New York trial, which even Trump's opponents say is the weakest of all the cases against him.
Listener says, at least Donald can string a sentence together. Joe Biden doesn't know what day it is. Listener, have a listen to Donald Trump. He can't string a sentence together. He speaks in little bursts of words, which occasionally come together as a coherent thought. But actually, he's more inarticulate than Joe Biden is, if you actually listen to what he is saying. Marianne, describe for us, please, what's happening on America's major college campuses.
Yeah, this is all related to Israel's prosecution of the war in Gaza. So we have had protests that are spreading now and escalating in Yale, in most of the Ivy League universities, in fact, at Yale, at Columbia, NYU, which is not Ivy League, but anyway, and now it's over in Harvard also, and over in California, on California campuses. I have a real concern about this. So in a number of these situations, Harvard has, for example, closed Harvard Yard to the public now. At Yale, police arrested about, I heard, 72 most recently pro-Palestinian protesters, charging them with protesting. There has to be a balance between the freedom of expression, of course, and safety on campus. But there is a sort of an equation, a conflation, I would say, with the right to protest, which is a right of First Amendment freedom of speech, and this conflation with anti-Semitism. Now, I would absolutely say that if any of the protesters are targeting Jewish people, if they're targeting the Jewish faith or Jewish communities, that is absolutely wrong. That is not protected by the First Amendment, and action should be taken as appropriate. But if people are prosecuting the manner in which Israel the manner in which Israel is prosecuting the war in Gaza, that to me is a legitimate freedom of speech expression, and it's very, very muddy at the moment, and I'm not seeing it seems that some of what's happening is quite worrying.
Okay. So, Cal Thomas, I presume you are a free speech advocate, that you believe in the First Amendment and the right to protest by students at university campuses.
Well, of course I do, Matt. But what you're seeing now, I haven't seen or heard of since the 1930s and the rise of Nazi Germany. There was a Holocaust survivor interviewed on one of the networks this morning, and she said she never thought she would live long enough to see this kind of anti-Semitism and outright hatred for the Jewish people repeated in the United States. Where are these kids getting this information? Mayor Eric Adams was on television earlier this morning saying that he believes these protests now on 22 American campuses are being orchestrated. He said, was there a fire sale on some of these tents? All these tents that are being set up in main squares on the university look alike. Who's paying for those? Three Columbia University professors in New York are openly anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. Let me just read you this quickly. One is a guy named Mohammed Abdu, who is described on Columbia's website as, quote, a North African Egyptian Muslim anarchist, interdisciplinary activist scholar of indigenous, black, critical race, and Islamic studies, as well as gender, sexuality, abolition, and decolonization. And he further says, yes, I'm with Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad. This is where these kids are getting their ideas. They don't have a clue. They're being indoctrinated, not educated.
What you say to that, Marianne?
Well, I think that a professor who says he's with Hamas and Hezbollah and jihadis has no business saying that. And I'm fine with action being taken against that. I'm not fine with, whether you agree with students or not, whether you think that their ideas are misguided or not, they have a right to protest as they do about any other thing that takes their fancy. And I really am uncomfortable with, as I say, I would absolutely condemn any protests that are anti-Semitic or that are targeting Jewish people are making them feel unsafe. But I think that these students have a right to protest the deaths, what's happening in Gaza at the moment, the 34,000 dead, most of whom are women and children, Israel's siege of the area, the creeping famine that's happening. I think they have a right to protest this.
And indeed, Cal, surely you can protest against what Israel is doing in Palestine without being told you're anti-Semitic.
Israel is Palestine, Matt. Yeah, of course, but as long as it's done peacefully. But I've seen some of these kids interviewed on television, and a reporter asked them, what do you mean when you say from the river to the sea? They didn't have a clue. There was a Colombian student interviewed yesterday who actually said, I don't have enough information on the issue to form an opinion. What? What are you taking, basket weaving in college? What do you mean you can't have an opinion? You're there protesting. You don't even know what you're protesting. So I think a lot of this stuff, these kids don't have any sense of the history of the Middle East, certainly the history of Israel. These figures about 34,000 or 300,000, whatever it is, these are all coming out of Hamas and are inflated by the media.
Sorry, how do you know that, Cal? How do you know that these figures are not accurate? I mean, have you not seen as well in the last 24 hours the pictures of the mass graves, of the bodies being taken out of the mass graves? Are we going to try and deny that those aren't people who have been murdered by the Israeli forces who have come into Gaza?
As you know, I hope, that a lot of this stuff is organized especially for the media. Hamas has hid out among the Gazan people for years. They hope that Israel will respond after they attack Israel so that civilians are killed. They invite in the cameras. They claim all these people are dead because of the evil Israelis. That gets put on BBC and other worldwide media. It gets denounced at the United Nations, and the narrative is created that Israel is the victim here. Is the perpetrator, not the victim. And so that's the way the narrative has always gone. Every time Israel is attacked, first sympathy is extended to them, but after a while, when they fight back, all of a sudden they become the perpetrator and not the victim.
Marion, Cal's views are widely held in the United States, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, I do understand, Cal, where you're coming from partially, but I see a parallel here between the way America prosecuted its war in Afghanistan and Iraq after 9/11, where initially the whole world was with America after 9/11 and really shared that sense of shock and outrage, as I think the world was with Israel after October 7th. But the reason that Israel has lost support is not because of anti-Semitism. It is because of the way it's prosecuted this war in Gaza. It is the violation of human rights, the violation of international law. We have seen the starvation of women and children, the deliberate strategic attacks. We saw the 7 or 8 children who were killed the other day in a refugee camp. They were playing a game of foosball on a broken table. They've nowhere to live, you know, amongst rubble, and they were still struck by Israeli fighter jets, you know. So this, what Israel is doing at the moment is wrong. It's inexcusable. And I think it's entirely appropriate for the world to express its concern and its revulsion. It does not make the world anti-Semitic. It does not question or undermine Israel's right to exist or to defend itself.
Thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas, for joining us from the United States. We'll talk to you again.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.